That movie sucked.
I kind of liked it.
Movie Night Crew Network.
Hey, y'all. Alex here, your favorite host. Don't worry, I won't tell Zach. Just before we get to today's awesome episode, there are a few announcements that I wanted to bring to y'all's attention. As you know, the month of October was crazy busy for us. You're especially aware of that if you are on our Patreon, because we haven't put out our bonus episode yet for the month of November and October. So no worries, we promise that's coming imminently as soon as Zach is finished editing this week's episode. But speaking of Patreon, we do have a new wonderful patron that just joined us in the Cabbage Patch. Thank you so much to our dear friend Charlie. We adore you and are so thankful for supporting us here over at Cabbage Corp. And we know that you are one of our biggest fans. We are one of yours. And if anyone wants to love Charlie as much as we do, you should check them out on their two podcasts, also on the network, Phantoms Gone Wrong, where they and their mom, Carrie, nerd out about some of their favorite fandoms. And also on Of the Eldest Gods, a read-along Rick Riordan podcast, starting with Percy Jackson and the Olympians. They just started season two with Sea of Monsters, so with their dear friend Taylor. So please go check them out. And thanks again, Charlie. We love you, and as much as we love, if not more than, Avatar. Also, we just, as we traveled through the month of October, were able to hang out with some of our movie night crew friends in person, which is something that happens fleetingly, but we wish happened more often. We made the boast of our trip and were actually guest stars on a recent episode of Movie Night Crew with where we watched Stranger Than Fiction. You should check them out on Twitter at movienight_crew and also wherever you get pod. And then last but not least, another one of our dear friends just making waves and being a boss babe. Some of our several friends on the podcast network, Christina Kahn and Grace, started a wonderful new independent publishing company called At Wildling Press. You can find them on Twitter or on Facebook, Instagram, or on their website, wildlingpress.com. That's WILDLING Press.com. Wildling Press is an independent publishing company that can help aspiring authors and writers with all of all skills and stages with their a la carte publishing services, or even with help publishing your manuscripts. So again, we're so proud and happy to support this new local independent company, and we encourage everyone who's listening today to go check them out at Wildling Press. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Rotten cabbages? What kind of slum do you think this is?
Well, it's that time again, folks. We've made it through almost an entire second season, rounding the corner, and we are here to record our second to last episode of season two.
Penultimate episode. Fun words are fun.
Yeah. Depending on where you were when this episode aired, the final episode was technically one long chonker, but we've broken it up into, just like we've done with others, book to chapter 19, The Guru, and then next week you'll be in for a special treat for our finale, but no spoilers yet.
That's right.
And I was going to ask about spoiler policy.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So we are all spoilers all the time, swearing, like very open, and there's just like with every other Movie Night Crew Network podcast.
Sounds perfect.
We have a special guest next week, so we're trying to be cagey about it. We have already recorded that episode.
But we also have another special guest for this week. So welcome, Ethan, our friend from True Stories of a Tried Hard. So welcome to My Cabbages.
Oh, My Cabbages!
I'm really excited to be here. Alex, thank you for reaching out to me, and I'm so glad we could set this up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. So can you go ahead and introduce our listeners to who you are and what your background is with Avatar The Last Airbender?
Yeah. So my name is Ethan. I'm 21 years old. I'm currently a junior in college studying computer science. I first experienced Avatar The Last Airbender in like bits and pieces as a kid, but my senior year of high school / freshman year of college, my best friend at the time kind of reintroduced me to it, because I only seen a few episodes here and there because I wasn't allowed to watch a lot of like popular children's shows when I was a kid, just because of how my parents were and still are.
My parents wouldn't let me watch Power Rangers as a kid. They didn't like that. They didn't like talk it out with the bad guys. They punched.
No, them instead. Yeah, the only time I got to watch shows like this was like at friends' houses. Like, my parents still hate SpongeBob, so the only time I got to watch SpongeBob was at a friend's house. Yeah.
God, SpongeBob. See, this is like, I was just
they thought it would rot my brain. Like, they thought it would rot my brain. Not.
I mean, they're not wrong.
No, I was just talking about this with Alex yesterday. Like, there were so many parents and like adults when SpongeBob came out that they were just like, oh, that's some brain rotting like bullshit television. And now looking back, like, SpongeBob is one of the smartest comedies that Nickelodeon has ever made. Like, it's really, really tight. The jokes are awesome. Like, it was really ahead of its time in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, people's parents are weird in different ways. Like, I couldn't watch PG-13 rated movies until I turned 13. So.
Oh, well, that's one thing my parents got right, is that I could watch PG-13 movies at like 8. Like, I watched Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark when I was like 7. So
interesting that you were able to watch movies that they like and find value in. How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
It's almost like parents are biased.
Yeah, anyway, it's almost like
we're
that.
Very similar. Because I also did not watch Avatar all the way through, like episode by episode, week by week, like some of my friends did growing up. I remember the reruns that would come on Nickelodeon. So it sounds like you and I, Ethan, had a very similar viewing experience.
It's remarkable how similar people's experiences are with Avatar. Every single person we ask is like, yeah, no, I saw like bits and pieces of it as a kid, and then it came out on Netflix and everybody watched it, and it's like, well, always.
Yeah, that's when I showed it to my girlfriend and she absolutely loved it.
Awesome. We so love like growing the Avatar family. So yeah,
her favorite character is Appa because she loves animals. So
it's the best.
That is character. Adorable. Yes, we also love Appa. You may see on our Discord because you're already a member, but we had to start our Appa support group when we were going through the Appa drought, because even though only a few episodes or like, you know, 8 doesn't seem like a lot, when you draw that out across a bi-weekly podcast, it lasts for several months.
Yes, it does.
So we're very also glad to have our bud off back.
Fun fact, the new Star Trek show on Paramount Plus just started airing, Star Trek Prodigy, the goofy, blobby, like alien pet character of that show is also voiced by the same person who does Appa and Momo.
D. Bradley Baker?
That's right. That's right. That's the guy.
Yep.
Well, we're so glad. Look at, you know more trivia than we do.
Well, I only know that name because Star Wars The Clone Wars was a show I watched a lot growing up, and Dee Bradley Baker was every clone in that show. So.
I totally missed that. So he was all the, like, Jango Fett clones.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's wild.
Voice actors are amazing people.
Truly, they're chameleons of sound.
He's also Perry the Platypus, so there's that.
Wait, what is Perry the Platypus from?
Phineas and Ferb.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Yeah, we're both, like, showing our bare nerd ass by revealing that we never watched Phineas and Ferb. I've heard great things about it.
It's a fantastic show. It is one of the few shows that I was allowed to watch as a kid, that, like, other kids watched.
I think it missed my age group, like, just a little bit. I was, like, just... Like, it was coming out when I was already a little bit too old to, like, naturally start watching it.
Yeah. And then I got into Adventure Time instead. Well, without further ado, I think it's great. We're all lovers of Avatar and Appa. So we will go ahead and jump into this week's episode, which is Book to Earth, Chapter 19, The Guru. So thanks again for joining us, Ethan. And one reason we thought it would be really interesting to have you on for this episode, because there's a lot of like plot things to follow. And we honestly felt it was a setup for the season finale. However, there's some really interesting talk about mental health and meditation and, you know, choosing your destiny
and self-discipline.
Yeah, and a lot of themes that I thought would be interesting to hear about from someone who regularly talks about things like this, which is definitely something I think you cover on episodes of your podcast.
I do. I recommend meditation to pretty much everybody because it's something that's helped me and something that I think will definitely help others. If nothing else, and just a way to get your heart rate down and just relax a little bit more. But yeah, a lot of shit goes down in this episode because it's so close to the end.
Really. I think that in our last episode, we were also joined by another fan of the pod, Mots. And as Mots described, this episode is just where things are, like, shit is just about to hit the proverbial fan. And I think it finally does in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it happens in slow motion.
Yeah, because it's getting, like, sliced up by the rotors. It's just barely starting to be diced.
But there's so much happening at the same time, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm honestly, like, surprised in a good way. Like, I watched the episode earlier today, and I was surprised in a good way that, like, the writers and the animators are able to keep up with all these different characters that we've, you know, come to know and love and have it all still make sense and not have you feel like you're lost. So I'm just impressed, to be honest, with everything that happened here.
Yeah, I am too. And yeah, it takes a lot. And I am surprised as a kid that I was able to keep up with all these different threads. There's political intrigue and betrayal and family reunions and deep meditation, like other like separation of mind and body stuff. Like, yeah, a lot to follow.
As someone who's also, like, working on his own, like, creative endeavor, one of the most challenging things to get right is, like, the A story, B story, like, sometimes even C story, like, dynamic that a lot of modern TV, like, manages to do so effortlessly. Mm-hmm. And Avatar is no exception. These stories, they're all happening, but the episode doesn't really feel crowded.
No. And that's honestly a feat in of itself, even though absolutely. the show is a feat, because like it's a cohesive story that's taken place over three seasons, and that's all they really needed to do. And I know we have Legend of Korra, and I'm sure that's where y'all are moving on to from here, but we haven't really gone back to visit this world anyway in any small screen media or big screen media.
Not yet, but we have Avatar Studios.
We do. And we have Netflix's Avatar, who just cast their Ozai. And how are y'all feeling about Mr. Daniel Dae Kim?
You know what? I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. It's going to be interesting because we really don't see Ozai a lot in seasons one and two. So by casting such a prominent character or like actor in this role, I'm interested to see if they stick with that script and kind of keep him on lock until like, the very end.
Is your worry that they'll just show his face like right away?
Yeah, I hope they don't. I hope it's no pun intended here, but a slow burn.
Christ. In the movie, like, they literally reveal him sort of like almost like walking to the fucking restroom in the halls of the king's chambers or whatever. It's so nonchalant. He's just having a conversation with Zhao about some shit. About the library. He's gone to the ancient library. He lets us know three times. Anyway.
I don't know what you're talking about, because I've never seen this movie that you're referring to.
No. Zach, what are you talking about? Ethan?
I've never how do you feel about the casting choice?
Incidentally, the spa at Lake Laogai is lovely, and I recommend it to anyone who claims to have seen that movie.
There is no movie in Losingsay.
That's correct.
No. how are you feeling about the casting choice, Ethan?
I really like Daniel Day-Kim as an actor. I really liked him in Lost. So I'm hopeful that because Netflix is dedicated to preserving the integrity of an entirely POC cast, unlike some people, that we will get a better story as a result.
I agree. I think that's a great point. And you know what? From my perspective, Daniel Day-Kim is also, just like how Dante Basco has aged very well. And as he's gotten older, like a fine wine, Daniel Day-Kim is also a very attractive man, and I won't be super upset if they give us a little bit more teaser in season one than the animated show.
I will say, dude's got a fucking hell of a jawline. Like, he's got jawline for Ozai for sure.
That Ozai and that I combine Ozai and jawline. That jawline could cut me, and I would say thank you. Like, this man is attractive.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, daddy. Yes.
You said it, not me, Zach. You said it, not me.
Well, with that being said, like, I think there are...
More like Daddy Day Kim, am I right?
Oh, Lord. But
come on.
That was too easy.
That was worse than my slow burn pun. That wasn't a pun. Well,
y'all just jealous.
We keep talking about these different threads, and in order to anchor or ground ourselves, if you will, and the listeners, so we're not worried about keeping up with every single detail. Quick plot summary, courtesy of Avatar Wiki.
After the group receives letters that were confiscated by the Dai Li and splits up temporarily, Aang meets Guru Patik, who trains him in the mastery of the Avatar state through the unlocking of chakras. Sokka reunites with his father for the first time in years, and Toph is captured by Xing Fu and Master Yu, who transports her to her parents' estate, though she escapes by heuristically metalbending. Azula forms a scheme with Longfang to overthrow the Earth King, and Katara is captured. Aang sees a vision of an endangered Katara and abandons the training early to save her against the wishes of the Guru.
There's a lot of foreboding that happens in the beginning of this episode. Because, you know, we're starting off on some good vibes. Yes. Like, Aang is, reunited with Appa, drops off Sokka on his way to the Guru, and so Sokka can reunite with their father. Katara is, you know, having some really funny times as Earth King's diplomat / liaison, sitting around the table of all of these army generals, which not sure how I feel, because normally Katara is so serious,
right?
And the fact that she is so laid back and joking about literally the plot of an entire war that could make or break humanity, she's taking things a little lightly.
Hey, maybe Katara deals with trauma the same way I do. By humor.
Yeah, making jokes when they are the least appropriate to make jokes. I'm that way too. I do that all the time.
I do that in situations where I try and disarm social situations that are uncomfortable through humor, or if they're, I can't do long, awkward silences.
Me neither. So
I feel kind of like when Katara, like, they were outlaying this huge plan, like, this is where these soldiers are gonna go, and this is how we're gonna do it, and there's just this pause, and almost as if, like, okay, well, what do we do? What are people's thoughts? And that's when she inserts her Momo joke, and that's what I was probably... I probably would also have been a little more humorous, because this was like, ha ha ha, the world's ending, the world might be on fire, but it's going to be okay, guys.
Of course, I just had this image of, like, you know, Titanic scale, like, gigantic Momo swatting these ships off of the map in real life scale.
As cool as that would be, we do not get that.
No, unfortunately.
I think of all my plot lines in this episode, and they really didn't honestly touch on it, I think, at all in your summary, babe, was Zuko and Iroh.
Yep. They don't mention Zuko in that. You're right.
And that's actually where we start the episode, like at the very beginning, where Zuko has finally gotten over his angst coma, and he comes out refreshingly optimistic, which is not something we'd seen from Zuko yet. And, you know, he comes out and Iroh gets him some soup. But apparently Zuko was a picky eater as a kid, and Iroh doesn't think he'll like it. But he's actually, like, you know, happy for what the day has in store, which is something that we haven't really seen from him.
Iroh's like, are you sure you didn't stick around Lake Laogai a little too off, a little too much? This is a little bit out of character for you. Yeah, Zuko is being, I don't know, not toxic in a way that's really refreshing and disarming.
Yeah, and again, I, of course, not arguing that Zuko's character has not made very, you know, deeply morally flawed decisions and has not been an asshole throughout his life, but just how Ethan was saying, you know, humor is a way he deals with trauma, I think Zuko is just, he hasn't dealt with trauma at all. He's been through more trauma than any child should ever have to, and he's just pushed that out of his mind and literally has made it his life mission to try and fulfill this destiny that has been bestowed upon him, and is just trying to accept that, nope, this is how things have always been, that's how they will be, and as we can see now, like, he's finally gotten to a point, and I'm just so proud of him. He's accepting how, you know what, this is not what I would have thought my life was going to be, but it's simple, and I'm here with my uncle, and we have this new chance, and, like, I think that's a feeling that Zuko has never had, like, waking up and being like, what am I going to do with my day, versus having everything already prescribed and, like, written out for him. So
yeah, he's so, like, 100% mainline, I must find the Avatar at all costs, that he has never woken up and been like, huh, what'll I do with my day? It's always been like, my honor! I have to find it! My honor! And it's,
Boy, I can't wait for y'all to get to the Emerald Island players and how that goes down.
Emerald Island players is one of my favorite episodes of all time.
We actually, because we're thinking about, who do we want to have potentially on as guests for season 3? And no less than 5 people have been like, can we be on for the Ember Iron Players episode?
We keep on emailing people. At this point, we're going to have to email people with the caveat that, like, please pick an episode other than Ember Island Players, because we don't know who's going to be on it yet.
But, yeah, it's definitely, I'm excited for Boiling Rock episode for season 3 for obvious reasons that are not related at all to the closest we get to canon Zuko. Mm-hmm. But anyways, moving on.
As someone pointed out in the Discord, I can't remember who, but there's a piece of lore at some point where Child Zuko is writing a letter to Iroh asking him to teach him Paisho tricks. And we learned that in the beginning of the series, when Iroh is trying to get Zuko to sit down and play Paisho with him, he's not, like, trying to push his interests onto Zuko. He's, like, desperately trying to reconnect with the child that he, like, you know, helped raise in a way. And it's, like, really recontextualizes that opening scene.
Well, that makes me just all the more sad.
I know.
I know.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to tear bend.
And you were wondering who that person was, and it is another lovely friend of ours, Charlie. So thank you, Charlie.
Of course, it was Charlie. They always know. They know so many things.
They have the best, not only Avatar memes, but also the best Funko Pop collection, which I am kind of jealous of. I live vicariously through them, because if I ever bought a Funko Pop, then I know I would just get sucked into it.
See, I really don't like the way Funko Pops look. I don't like their soulless, beady eyes, and so I probably would not have that problem. I have, like, I think 2 Funko Pops, and I have no desire to have any more.
I have 4, and they are all gifts.
I have 1 I think was also a gift, but mine was Maleficent.
Charlie, the knower of 10,000 things.
Truly.
Well, what are some I said that my favorite part of, or like through line of this episode was the story with Iroh and Zuko, how we get Happy Face Zuko, and they're getting their Ghibli moment with starting to open the Jasmine Dragon, like, on the first day, and it's just gonna be a simple, you know, there's no pressure, we're just gonna have a good day. What are other people's, or what are y'all's, you know, favorite parts of the episode?
No, it's only a matter of time before No Face shows up at this tea shop.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. Just don't, whatever you do, do not feed him.
Yeah. Don't take his gold. That's
no,
what it is.
No. We don't want to upset him.
No.
So let's see. For me, it would probably have to be the through line with Sokka, to be honest, because
I was gonna say Sokka too.
I don't know if I've told y'all this, but Sokka and I relate on a spiritual level.
Love that. Why is that?
Yeah, please elaborate.
Because I learned at about, well, maybe a bit younger than he did, to drink the respect women juice or else.
Yeah, because that's another character arc. It's not as well pronounced as Zuko's, but Sokka does not start this show as a lovable character.
No, he doesn't.
He starts it as a very abrasive, like, kind of misogynistic twat.
Yep.
But I think, and that's something that we're really, that's, I will think the writers do a good job of unpacking in season one, is that that is something that is, you know, it's a systemic misogyny that is baked into a lot of the culture and traditions of the Water Tribe.
Well, it's like what Vosh said a few weeks ago. Like, this show has always been really good about critiquing all of the cultures, not just the Fire Nation. And for with sure. The Water Tribe, we definitely get an overarching, like, toxic masculinity that is at play.
Mm-hmm. You know, men go fight, women stay home, that sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's why, and we touch on it a little bit, but Sokka, when he's left behind, like, he feels abandoned. Like, he's like, no, I feel useless here. I have been raised as a warrior, or going out and hunting and being a provider, and my father just left me here with all of the women and children, and now I'm a glorified babysitter. But when he reunites with Hakoda, his dad, he's like, why, like, why did you, like, leave me? Or he made the comments, like, of course I left you. Like, I left it in the best hands that I could.
He says,
I've always known you're a great warrior.
Really?
Why do you think I trusted you to look after our tribe when I left?
Yeah. Which is, I think, a really great, it's a huge moment of validation for Sokka. Because I think by this point, you know, he's learned that he himself is a contributor. He's a provider. He's the ideas guy.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, getting that validation means everything.
Mm. And Sokka, like, obviously deeply loves his father, but he also is very reverent of his father as well. Because when Aang drops him off, he's like, man, I feel sick to my stomach. I'm so nervous right now. And Aang's just like, whatever, man, that's your fucking dad. Like, go give him a hug. I wish I had a dad. Right. That doesn't happen, but that's a really dark thought.
Well, I mean, like, that's the gist of it.
Mm-hmm. Attention, Air Appa flyers.
It's only Sokka? It's only Sokka. Listen, we're not going to stop at the Water Tribe, so you're just going to have to kind of bail and hope for the best. See you later. Tell your dad I said hi.
We'll be back in a week.
Yeah.
Thank you again for choosing Air Appa.
That's right. That's my co-pilot. He's not allowed to have the microphone. Give me that back.
Actually, that's interesting. I never thought about that, how it's you only hear from one pilot. You never hear, or at least whenever you're getting the announcements over the plane, I've never heard two different voices unless from the cockpit. It's always, like, either the pilot or, like, the lead flight attendant.
God, being a pilot has to be the most expensive way to obtain a captive audience ever.
Honestly.
You go to flight school, you're just like, really, I just want a bunch of people that have to listen to me and not be able to leave.
That, wow, I never thought about it that way. What if there was a pilot who tried to be a stand-up comedian in the air, and people were just cringing the entire time?
That was my idea!
Oh my god, you know what, Ethan? There's not a shadow of doubt in my mind that has happened before. That, like, a pilot has gotten way too chummy with trying out his, like, tight 15 on the flight. It's like, while I have you on this 18-hour flight to Shanghai, let me try a couple of jokes that I've been working through.
Oh boy.
Airline food. I like it.
Oh,
next
boy.
Joke.
This is where the thought I was going, and I love that we had the same idea, Ethan, but when Zach mentioned, like, oh, well, it's someone who's trying to, like, get in, you know, their, I forgot what you had said, but yeah, it is, they're trying to test out if their stand-up's gonna be, like, I'm gonna become, oh yeah, it's the best, or the most expensive way to get a captive audience. He's like, you know what, I've always wanted to be a stand-up comedian, so I'm going to go to flight school, and then I'm going to, I have this entire bit, they pass with flying colors, and they go to flight school just so they can become a pilot, and they can, like, give their, practice their routine in front of people who cannot run away from them.
Or it's like, it's the opposite, like, they go to a few nightclubs to try out their thing at the very beginning, and, like, one person walks out, and they're just like, fucking never again. I'll show them. And then fucking go to flight school so that they physically can't.
Yeah. Or they just have really bad stage fright and literally cannot tell any jokes when people are looking at them. Oh, well, anyways.
Yeah, this Air Appa tangent has gone on long enough. But anyway, there's an episode.
We had our layover on our way to the Eastern, well, wait, what air temple is this? Because this is the fourth temple.
Let me see. Eastern air temple.
Eastern air
Great,
temple.
Great, I got it right. So on the way to, that's their brief layover to the Eastern air temple. Please check your, the flight boards to check your gate and any changes that may have happened to capture your connecting flight. But once Air Appa lands safely at the Eastern Air Temple, we meet Guru Patik, and Aang goes on quite the spiritual journey this episode.
Mm. Yes, and he does it in a very peculiar way, which, when I was watching the episode today, it made me draw a parallel that I don't know if anybody else has touched on before. It's that Guru Patik is Yoda, right? And Aang
this is in my notes.
And Aang is Anakin Skywalker. And I guess Luke Skywalker in some parts, too.
Well, in the very, like, so cut to the end briefly, but I think he's definitely Luke in that moment, because that's literally exactly what Luke does. Is like,
right.
He sees Leia in distress, and he's just like, I must go, and get on my Appa, I mean my X-Wing, and Yoda / the Guru is like, wait, if you do that, you'll never finish your training, and you'll fail as a Jedi / Avatar. It's literally like, I was like, wow, this is so Luke vibes right now. Like,
very 100%. Much so. But the reason I bring up Anakin, we'll probably get into that a little bit later, is the whole, like, leaving attachments behind thing. Anakin and Aang share that character flaw of not being able to let go of those who they love. which in and of itself does seem admirable on the surface, at least to me, because it is a flaw that I possess. So just seeing that from Aang, that just made me relate more to him, even though, like I said, I relate most to Sokka of the gang, as it were.
My hot and spicy take, so hot, this take, is that the guru's wrong about the final gate.
Do tell.
I also challenge the notion that the inability to let go of the connections that you've built with people will not inevitably lead someone to the dark side where they kill a bunch of younglings. That will not happen. Anakin is like an extreme case in the philosophy of Star Wars that is, again, another spicy take here, wrong.
Oh yeah, the Jedi are very, very deeply flawed.
The Jedi are, that's why, you know, people got so mad about The Last Jedi when Luke is like, it's time for the Jedi Order to end. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm finally fucking glad that Luke is like, you know, thinking for himself. And even though he's kind of a washed up has-been, like, at least he's taking a stand.
Yeah, because the original trilogy, he bought a hook, line, and sinker, so...
Yeah, absolutely he did. But yeah, like, I think that Aang is... I think that his inability to let go of Katara is a strength, actually. And in the episode after this, where he's talking to Iroh is just like, yeah, I mean, fuck enlightenment. Choose love. And I'm here for that. I'm here for that message.
All you need is love. Love is all you need.
And survival, and earth, water, wind, and fire, and all the other chakras. But mostly love. Love, mm-hmm. Love. Love is most of what you need.
Well, I think that is, so this is a good time, I think, to go over all of the chakras, because it seems like Aang is kind of able to speedrun it, and then it's when he gets to the final one where there's that conflict. Mm-hmm. But the first chakra is the earth chakra, which is based on survival and is blocked by fear, and is located at the base of the spine. We have the water chakra, which is deals with pleasure and is blocked by guilt. The fire chakra, which deals with willpower, blocked by shame. The air chakra, which is based with love and is blocked by grief, which, if you ask me, is in direct conflict with the loss, but hey, it's all good.
Mm-hmm. And Aang actually brings that up later, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. The sound chakra, which deals with truth and is blocked by lies. The light chakra, which deals with insight and is blocked with illusion. And finally, the thought chakra, which deals with pure cosmic energy. It lets you become one with the universe and is blocked not by love, but by earthly attachments. And that's, I think, a really common thing, you know, in other kind of more Eastern-based religions or thought schools of thought, when in order to reach nirvana, you have to let go of these earthly attachments, or, you know, it's almost, I think, correlated kind of like with an ego death, right? Your sense of self just has to dissolve in order for you to see that in the grand scheme of the universe, you're, you know, just a drop in the ocean, but that doesn't make you insignificant. You're part of something much larger than yourself. And you as an individual is, I think, what kind of stands in the way of being able to touch into that. Because you see in very more like Western-based schools of thought where the individual and the thought of I and who you are and what you do are, like, who you are is defined by what you do. I kind of, on this side, I think, with Guru Patik here, because it's not about necessarily love that you're trying to let go of. It's what keeps you most grounded, or the thing that you idolize almost and like put before yourself over all things, which can be very toxic or harmful. It's like going back on the airplane analogy. If you can't help yourself or you can't help others until you put on your own face mask first. And I kind of think this is part of that philosophy. But interesting to hear other thoughts.
Yeah, something my mom told me once upon a time was that you can't pour out of an empty pitcher. So Aang is... So Aang, yeah, like you said, he kind of speedruns through most of the chakras, but where it stops is Katara, which I think is both adorable and, like, very endearing, because that is... It makes... Like, I just, there's a lot of character development for Aang. Like, there is throughout this whole series, because, you know, he's the main character, but still, like, this particular one brought a lot of things to light about how, like, how he's been feeling about all the stuff that's been happening. Like, when he reflects on hurting those soldiers from the general who tried to force him into the Avatar state, and the Sandbenders kidnapping Katara, and having Appa stolen, and all those things. And just the guilt and the shame and stuff that he has to go through and confront, like, Aang confronts his inner demons in this episode. Which is very interesting to think about.
Literally and physically.
Yes, he does. Or
literally and figuratively.
And Alex, like you were saying, as someone who has briefly studied some world religions, that is definitely a focus of Buddhism, which I think is what the Guru Patik is trying to touch on and emulate. And like you're saying, like breaking free from, you know, the cycle of being on Earth and ascending to Nirvana is letting go of that which attaches you. And putting things before what the ultimate goal is. And I think that's what Guru Patik was trying to do. But in the end, as we see later, Aang is able to unlock that chakra just in time.
Yeah, but then we also learn that it's literally almost deadly. Katara, yeah, Katara didn't have her magic water from the Northern Water Tribe, we would have been SOL. Man, that...
It was a really dark show that Nickelodeon made that ended with the main character dying in season two, huh? That was a... Man. At least Zuko's face got healed.
Well, one question I do have is, so for Aang, the hardest chakra to unlock was the final one, the... in letting go of earthly attachments. So what do you all feel is the chakra, and it doesn't have to necessarily go in order, but what would be the thing that it would be hardest for you to let go of?
I would probably say the, what's the one that's blocked by guilt? That's probably the one that I would...
Guilt is, hold on, that is the water chakra.
Yeah, that
deals with pleasure.
And is blocked by guilt. That's probably the biggest one for me. Not to get, like, existential here, but...
Please do, it's okay.
Okay. Just something that's been just a pattern in my life is that I believe that there are things that have happened to other people that weren't necessarily my fault, that I still believe are my fault. Like, for example, my parents divorced when I was 9 years old. I thought that that was at least partially my fault. And to a certain extent, I still do. Much less than I used to, but the thought is still there. And that's probably why I would have difficulty with the water chakra, because I just feel guilty about a lot of things that may not necessarily be my fault.
That is very insightful, and I think, you know, just even being able, you know, to verbalize that is a step in that direction of unlocking it. But yeah, to your point, it's hard to actually let go of it.
Mine's probably air.
But you're an airbender!
I know, but the hold up is grief.
Oh.
So, my dad died late last year, in December, and it's been tough. It's been really hard. You know, it's like, you know, what they say about, like, a weight that you carry around, and eventually it becomes manageable. You can stick it in your pocket and almost not notice it at some times, but, like,
still always there.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how deep in feelings, like, we're feeling all the feels on this episode, which I think is cathartic and healthy. So for me, I'm going to actually, I think, have to agree with Ethan on this one and say that the water chakra would be the hardest one for me. I was raised Catholic, and this is something that and faith and spirituality is something that I have struggled with a lot of my life. A lot of people that were raised Catholic have this kind
true.
Of mind game, or like this mentality. We call it Catholic guilt.
Yep.
So like, even though, you know, I no longer am practicing and, you know, have, you know, very big take issue with a lot of things that are at the very core tenets of this faith, you know, I still feel guilty for things yep. that are, I know, aren't my fault, or that I shouldn't be guilty about, but just getting over that mindset. And so, you know, I feel guilty for things where it's like, when I am trying to explore like different faiths or just outlooks on life and finding that answer, it's always been hard for me to say, oh, you know, I ascribe to a lot of those things, but at the end of the day, I'm still a Christian, and I believe in Jesus, and he was my savior. And like, you know, just being able, I feel like came to the point where it was like, I'm just saying those things because I feel like it's the right thing to say. And it's almost with Zuko in the last episode, where he would literally get physically ill because the image of himself was so in conflict with the actions that he was taking, that he had to physically and mentally fight through that. And I feel I finally have been able to push through it, or I'm a daisy, like pushing up like through the dirt. So we'll see where I go on this journey.
Catholicism has what I like to call weaponized guilt. Very much so. It feels like guilt is often used as a bludgeoning tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People in line.
Guilt is used to shame. So yeah. I think honestly, there's a lot of, you know, and this is interesting because I do identify as a firebender, but I am an Aries Pisces cusp in the astrology, or like the zodiac. So I have the water on the Pisces side, and then I have fire on the Aries side, which together water and fire come together to make steam. So I think that these two chakras are very core in my being, but unlocking them is also probably the two that I would struggle with the most, because that guilt makes me feel shameful in a lot of ways. So,
hey, Alex.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a practicing Christian, your trauma is valid.
Aw, well, thank you. That means a lot, Ethan. I appreciate that. And is just a really good, I'm glad we are able to talk about some of these issues, because a lot of the time on this podcast, you know, it's fun. We have a lot of like lofty, just kind of joking around. But this episode, this show, at the end of the day, it's a kid's show, but it also talks about issues like, you know, war and genocide and trauma and betrayal. And it's just, you know, something that, if they can, they do it so artfully.
And killing, but they can't ever say killing. So you nope. always hear like euphemisms like, hey, why don't you take care of him? Or let's make sure that that issue is dealt with. Like, you'll never hear them say, hey, kill that guy.
Mm-hmm. You'll never do X again.
You'll never hear like Kingpin from Into the Spider-Verse.
Kill that guy.
See, I feel like in my teenage years, I had a very, like, edgelord atheist phase where I was like, yeah, screw religion, God is dumb. And then, like, when Aang is talking about, like,
why would I give up the thing that, you know, fused chakras ago? That was, you know, it's like pointing out like inconsistencies in the guru's logic. And I'm just like, yang, fight the system.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like me. It was like me as a kid in Sunday school going, if God made the stars on day four or whatever, then why did he start with let there be light? You can't have light without stars. Grimace, you know.
Alex, we don't have time for me to unpack even what you just said there, because there's a lot there that was taught inaccurately in Sunday school. And only now I'm beginning to realize like how wrong I have been throughout most of my life. So we can talk about that at a later date, but
right. That's when you come on next time.
Sure.
Yeah. So we're circling the, up to the edge here. So let's briefly talk about the other plot lines.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned earlier how, speaking of speed running, with Aang and these chakras, can we please talk about Toph and how within the span of a single episode, she is told, oh, what are you going to do, bend metal?
Not even you can metal bend. And she's like bitches, fucking challenge accepted, okay?
And then she does in the most badass way possible.
The like, I love that we get to see the kind of, you know, the way that, like, the almost like the sound waves ripple when she, like, smacks her hands against the walls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is the same visual language that carries even through into Korra.
Yep.
When her children, when her daughters are, like, interacting with metal in a very similar way.
Mm-hmm.
We see all of the same kind of, you know, there's a scene where Lin is, like, testing the ground, and she's like, yeah, there's this big cavernous space down there, and we see the same exact sort of waves. So that was really cool to see that visual language, like, introduced.
Yeah. And one of the favorite parts of Toph, like, inventing metal bending on the fly is, like, how raw it was.
Yeah.
Like, it was more about strength than finesse at first. But we see, like, even later on in season 3, and definitely into Legend of Korra, we see how refined metal bending has become.
Mm-hmm. Toph makes progress in metal bending the way all human progress is made, through spite. Yep. Mostly through spite.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. Like, that is Toph. I mean,
that's just
all
Toph.
My earthbenders. Yeah. I feel like all the earthbenders, though, in my life, are that mentality where you tell them no, and then they're going to come back, and they're going to do it threefold.
Yeah.
I'm a waterbender, so I'm just going to sit over here.
We need to find the smartest medical mind in the country, and we all need to just be like, you'll never cure cancer, and then boom, there you go. That's how we cure cancer. We bully the person who's smart enough to cure cancer. Also, we have the faux Kyoshi warriors.
Yes. Now, I have beef with the Earth King because of this.
I know. It was so dumb.
I have beef with him.
God, he was so fucking dumb. I was
He's
just sitting there
so
like,
naive.
Yeah.
That he thoroughly believes that he can just tell the quote-unquote Kyoshi warriors whatever he wants, and their
even
secret
if these
is
were,
safe.
Even if these were the legit Kyoshi warriors, the fuck do you get off just, like, water cooler conversation letting slip that there's this secret plan? Like, this is the single most well-guarded and important facet of the entire plan, and here is the Earth King just being like, so you know what I heard, ladies, this super cool thing that we're gonna do, check it out, tell all your friends. Mm-hmm. Like, hashtag day of the Black Sun, what up.
We clearly, I mean, you can only blame him so much because in the last episode when we finally meet him, we learned that this is the first time that he is not only left Ba Sing Se, but left the palace full stop.
Right.
And has been sheltered his entire life. And so that naivety is, you know, not in whole his entire fault. However, you can also, like, if I were trapped inside those walls my entire life, I would still want to know, like, what's happening outside of them.
Sure.
And so I would probably still be attending that meeting with my generals rather than sending a 14-year-old.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing, like, I feel like Team Avatar probably just assumed because he's the fucking Earth King that they didn't need to, like, add the caveat that, like, hey, fucking numbskull. Hey, don't go running your fucking mouth off about our super secret plan. Could you maybe not run your mouth off about our super secret fucking plan? Great, cool, okay, thanks, bye. I bet they didn't feel like they needed to say that because it would have gone without saying. But they put way too much faith in the Earth King.
Mm-hmm.
As a completely unrelated side note, I recently got into a 4-player cooperative game called Deep Rock Galactic, which me and my friends lovingly refer to as Left for Dwarf. But in it, when you play single player, the robot that comes with you to help you fend off the evil hordes is called Bosco. And so now whenever I hear the king talk about Bosco, all I can think of is some dwarf yelling about some robot.
Yeah, and can we talk about that Bosco is like an actual bear instead of like a platypus bear or
an armadillo bear
or anything also, like that?
Why is it that like fruits and vegetables are not also combinations of things? Like we have regular bananas, we have regular onions,
mm-hmm.
we have like regular cabbages. Yep. Why are they not like cabbage lettuce or like...
Those are too similar. Cabbages,
yeah, true.
And lettuce are too similar.
It'd be cabbage lemon. Why don't we have a cabbage lemon? Ooh. That actually sounds like it would taste pretty fucking baller, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, if it's mostly water with like a little bit of lemon, sure.
Mm.
Cabbage? I don't know. Cabbage is pretty, like, or cruciferous vegetables are usually pretty bitter,
mm-hmm.
and then combining that with the acidity of a lemon, it'd be interesting.
So then Ty Lee decides to, like, basically do an impression of the Earth King and just be super, like, open about who they are on purpose because they want the Dai Li to overhear them. And it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, the king wasn't doing this on purpose. This wasn't some 4D chess move that the king was doing. He was just being a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But they very clearly intended to let slip to the Dai Li who they are so that Azula can manipulate them. And it's a really brilliant plan. And God, Azula is terrifyingly intelligent. She is so scary smart.
And it all comes crashing down.
Yeah.
Eventually.
It is. I think people, well, just like the Earth King got comfortable, living his cushy life in the palace, I think the gang got a little too comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They celebrated a little too prematurely.
We got the king on our side, we got Longfang arrested, and when we get back, Suki's waiting for me.
Yeah, girls are waiting for us. Thanks, Positive Attitude.
Everything is gonna work out perfectly, from now on and forever.
And don't get me wrong, they all absolutely deserve a break.
Yes.
But... if
they all spent at least a good chunk of the first season like going on individual vacations,
right?
The biggest plot hole, well, to be fair, that was before they knew that they had a very limited window before the solar eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
However, the biggest plot hole for me is that if Sokka had just taken 10 minutes,
yeah.
He could have even flown there. He'd been like, oh, wait, Suki? Yeah, I haven't seen my dad in, like, 7 or however many years. Like, that can wait. I'm going to, like, go and, like, see my girlfriend for 5 minutes before I head out.
Suki a smooch for, like, it'll take literally 10 minutes before we leave the city. And he would have been like, oh, shit,
these aren't the Kyoshi warriors. Or maybe he's so oblivious that he just would have been like, yeah, whatever. See you later, babe.
That is one of Sokka's like defining character traits, that he's oblivious to everything. Which, right. It's just also something, as someone with ADHD, that Sokka and I share. Yeah. So,
oh, yeah. Same, for me. Big fucking same.
I'm not going to hold that against him, because he did and I think I may have mentioned this last episode, when they first met up with, when they were on their way to Ba Sing Se, and they're trying to take the ferry over, and he saw Suki outside of makeup, he had no idea
right.
who she was.
Right.
Yeah, but nothing ruins an ADHD kid's brain day like a 3 p.m. war appointment.
Pretty much.
You're just in waiting mode all day. It's a nightmare. You gotta worry about, is the king gonna have the right color minis for the demonstration that I need? Like, it's a mess.
It is.
It's a big mess.
Well, I think this episode, like we said, sets up a lot of things. So, like, wrapping it all together, mm-hmm. like, Toph learns how to metal bin and escapes her captors. Aang gets a really bad feeling and has this vision of Katara in danger.
Runs back to his X-Wing and takes off from Dagobah, like, never to see Yoda again.
Pretty much. Because Gurupatthika is never even mentioned after this. Just really? Never even mentioned.
Wow.
No.
And when he says that if you leave, you'll never be able to enter the Avatar state, I'm wondering if, like, did you have some vision? Is there some type of prophecy yeah. that you're not cluing us into here?
Cut to the SpongeBob narrator. Wrong!
Pretty much.
Yeah, because we know that Aang does eventually reach the Avatar state. It's all fine. I want to see, there's no episode of this in Korra, but, like, I want to see Korra struggle through all of these gates. Like, Aang just kind of opens the chakras like it's nothing, but I guarantee you Korra would stumble on every single fucking one of those.
Oh, she absolutely would, because that's the beauty of Korra and Aang, is that Aang is a very spiritual person and struggles to master the elements. Korra masters most of the elements very quickly, but is not a very spiritual person, so it just takes right. her longer.
It's like, Aang is, like, strong-willed and a healthy person that has to learn how to become the Avatar, and Korra is a pretty well-seasoned Avatar who has to learn to become a healthier person. So they have, like, opposite, like crisscrossing journeys, almost.
Yeah. Well, and the last story that comes to the wrap is when Azula and the rest of the Birds of Prey are oh-so-conveniently setting this trap for the Dai Li and making it seem that Long Fang set this whole thing up. Like, it was all his perfect little scheme, and they just walked right into it. Oh, gee, you caught me, guys.
Mm-hmm. It was Long Fang all along.
The best play that you can make in a situation like this is to let someone who's lesser than you think they have all the cards. That's mm-hmm. the strongest power move, and Azula knows that in spades.
Dai Li in the trap, Dai Li in the trap.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk very quickly, and then we'll move on to experience points, but I think it's great when Sokka's dad is like, all right, all you other men, get moving. And Sokka's like, what do you want me to do, dad? And he's like, didn't you hear me? I said all you other men, get moving.
Mm-hmm.
He calls Sokka a man, which I know Sokka at this point, like, is a young man, but right. It's just so nice to see that validation happen.
Yeah.
Like, Sokka has desperately, desperately wanted this from his father, and he gets it.
We stand parental validation.
We stand yes. parental validation.
Well, I think, and unfortunately, I'm glad that they didn't end the episode with, it's just, oh, we've been invited to the palace for tea. I'm glad we end it there versus seeing Iroh and Zuko having to have their illusion shattered within this episode. We get one. Mm-hmm. We exactly one whole full episode
yeah.
where Zuko has a moment of respite.
Mm-hmm. Ain't no rest for Zuko.
Ain't no rest for the Zuko. That's pretty good.
Ain't no, yeah. Do we, are you a D&D fan, Ethan?
Alex, I am a dungeon master.
Oh my goodness. Well.
That makes three. One, two, three. Three dungeon masters. Because we are also both of us dungeon masters. Anyway, how about we hand out some experience points?
Uncle, do you realize what this means?
I won't get to finish my game.
Shouldn't there be a board or some pieces or something to jangle?
I won Dungeons and Dragons, and it was advanced.
Evil? Or maybe chaotic neutral?
The Demogorgon!
We're deep shit.
You've been shot by an arrow.
Ow!
Well, there'd be penalties to her experience if she acted out of alignment.
Why don't you go first, babe?
I'm gonna give mine to Toph for fucking metal bending. I think that's a hell of a crit success. It's a nat 20. It had to be. She must have just sat there just rolling. Like, I imagine her sitting there with the DM, just like, I try to metal bend. 19. Fuck. I try to metal bend. 17. Fuck. I try to metal bend. 20. Hell yeah! And it happens. And that's just, that's how it went in my head.
I love that so much.
Yeah. Do you have yours, Ethan?
I actually do.
Go. Yeah.
I'm gonna give mine to Zuko. I think Zuko deserves a nat 20 for just becoming a better person. It was, may not necessarily been just a thing he wanted to do, but it was just a really good roleplay moment between him and the DM as Iroh, just working out his flaws and just becoming a better, more well-rounded and optimistic player character.
He definitely got a few inspiration points for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Perfect pick. I'm not salty that both of y'all took my first and second choice. So I'm gonna make mine a twofer. Mine is one character's critical failure is another's critical success.
Oh, I had no idea about this.
Mine is the Earth King, whose diplomacy, perception, sense motive, whatever check he did.
Probably sense motive. I think that makes the most sense.
Absolutely, yep. Completely, it was not good.
Just rolls the nat 1 and the DM's just like, you tell the villains everything about the
secret
plan. In fact,
you know what? He probably had advantage on this role because this is your kingdom. You're the Earth King. You have all the intel and resources at your disposal. And he rolled a nat 1 on
snake
both
eyes.
Of them.
Fucking snake eyes.
Yeah. So, but with his failure and was clearly Azula's success, her diplomacy, intimidation, whatever check is just hardcore. And as Azula has, I've had to have a, it's been a journey for me with Azula. I mean, she is definitely a character I love to hate.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Even though some people that are in the Discord seem to love her for some reason.
Hardcore stan. Yeah. The one character, like, there are two things on Twitter that you do not do in Avatar. You do not ship, or you can ship whoever you want.
Ship
you just can't.
Siblings.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good
that's
rule.
A good
that's
one.
A general
don't,
good rule.
Don't ship siblings. Don't ship children and adult characters.
They're going to be upset if you do anything to instigate that Katang was anything but canon and written from the beginning, like written in the stars, and you also can't say Azul is a bitch. You just do things you do not do.
I want to say that there is a big difference between deeply respecting a character and liking them, because I deeply respect Azula and her intelligence, but I do not like her.
Yeah, I feel about Azula the same way I feel about Tom Brady, if y'all follow the NFL at all.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
Even if you don't follow the NFL, everyone will get that reference.
Okay. Like, I can't help but respect him.
There are plenty of nerds that have no fucking clue who Tom Brady is.
Yep.
Well, you don't follow sports and you know who Tom Brady is.
Well, I used to follow sports, and back when I used to follow sports, I know who Tom Brady is from that. Anyway, keep going,
Ethan. Anyways, go ahead.
But I can't help but respect Tom Brady for the work that he's put in, and you know the records that he's broken, and just the level of dedication that he has. But at the same time, I just straight up do not like him as a person. Yeah, I just don't.
Totally agree.
Such a good analogy. I wish I could say the same thing about, you know, like someone like Elon Musk, who is like, you know what, even though he's an asshole, like he's done great things for humanity. And it's just like,
overall,
terrible person. And I hate everything
Elon
that
Musk,
do.
I neither respect nor like.
Nope. Tax the rich. That's all.
Eat the rich.
Hashtag eat the rich. Anyway.
It's baby steps.
Yeah, right. We'll start with the tax.
maybe we'll just eat like a little piece of the rich's ear. Like, you know, we'll start small.
Just a mouthful. A bit off the flank.
Yeah, we'll go for a little nibble.
They won't miss an ear.
Anyway, folks, that's pretty much going to do it for us. We're My Cabbages. We have a Patreon. By the time this episode comes out, hopefully, we will have our big expose on Brave Little Toaster. It's a horrifying movie that we both wish didn't exist, but is still a pretty good movie that we enjoyed and had a lot of fun reviewing. We do the That Which Shall Not Be Named, the live action movie That Shall Not Be Named, is our number one episode on there right now, and we'll have more very shortly. You can find us on Twitter at CabbageCast, and you can email us at mycabbagecast@gmail.com.
Ethan, why don't you go ahead and plug your stuff?
Sure. My podcast, True Stories of a Tryhard, is available wherever you get your podcasts. It's on a bit of a hiatus right now, just because school is really, really, really stressful for me, and I just don't have the spoons. But I have a pretty decent backlog that you're able to listen to, and once I have a bit more time on my hands, I'll try to batch record some more so it's not as stressful for me. But right now, that's just how it is. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at True Stories Pod. You can follow me on Instagram at ethan.t.hulen. That is H-U-L-E-N. You can find me on Twitter at etphonehome. The O's are zeros, the E's are threes. And I think that is all for me.
All right. So that's going to do it for us, folks. I'm Zach.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm Ethan.
And this has been My Cabbages. We'll see y'all later. Tip your waiters and waitresses. Bye.
Peace and love.
Two lovers forbidden from one another. A war divides their people. And a mountain divides them apart. They built a path to be together.
Yeah, and I forget the next couple of lines.
It's movie night.
Grab your popcorn,
grab your coffee,
grab your friend,
grab a cat.
Let's go!
Who directed this?
What year did it come out?
Is that that girl from that show?
Who wrote this?
Where's the cat?
Who would you rather bang?
Pass the popcorn.
Does this pass the Bechdel test?
What about the Steve Buscemi test?
Does a woman literally speak in this movie?
Oh my god, a dog.
This reminds me of in Harry Potter when...
Are we recording?
What did the critics say?
It's a guilty pleasure.
What's your rating?
Can you be quiet?
Oh my god.
Movie night crew.
It's just like watching movies with your friends.
And then arguing about it after.
Every Sunday, wherever you get podcasts.
That movie sucked.
I kind of liked it.
Movie Night Crew Network.